Hey folks, welcome to a special edition of Labor Relations Information Systems Podcast. My name's Will Aitchison. A special edition is going to be about this morning's Supreme Court decision in the case of Harris versus Quinn. This is a big one. People had been saying that this might be the most significant labor relations decision in the last 40 years. So what was at stake at Harris, and how did the court end up resolving it? What was at stake was very simply whether the entire public sector in this country would become a right-to-work environment. Now, you hear that phrase a lot, right-to-work, and let's talk a minute about what it means, because it's frequently the definitions you hear for right-to-work are not always right. If you think about it, if you're in a collective bargaining relationship between an employer and a labor organization, you can have two types of permissible union dues systems. The first type of system is where membership in the union is completely voluntary, and an individual in the bargaining unit can either choose or not choose to join the union and pay dues. The second type, and this is the type that exists in 20 states and in the most populous states in the country, is what's known as a fair share environment. In a fair share environment, legislatures have decided that since unions have a duty of fair representation to everybody who is in a bargaining unit, it's unfair for somebody to say, hey, I don't want to be a member, I'm not going to pay you any dues, even though I'm going to reap the benefits of the union's negotiation of a collective bargaining agreement, and even though the union has a duty of fair representation with respect to me, with respect to grievances. States have said that's unfair, so what we're going to have is a different type of membership. This membership we will call fair share membership, and those who are fair share employees don't pay regular union dues. Rather, they pay an assessment, and the assessment is their pro rata fair share of the costs of negotiating and administering the contract. Typically, fair share assessments are about 70%, 80%, 90% of regular union dues, so they're less than regular union dues. What can be included in a fair share assessment? Really, the phrase I used before is what captures it. Only costs that can be somehow related to negotiating and administering the contract. Expenses, for example, on campaign contributions cannot be included in fair share. Politics is off limits. And also, some labor unions do some things that really don't have anything to do with negotiating and administering the contract. For example, they may send flowers to one of their members who's hospitalized, or they may have a union picnic once a year. Those sorts of expenses can't be charged to fair share members. So what right to work means, these are the states, or these right to work states, are the states where fair share has been declared illegal or is not permitted under state law. And what this decision, Harris versus Quinn, would have done would have turned the entire country into a fair share environment for public employees, and the result would be, some people predicted, that some large labor organizations actually might go out of business. This was a big deal. So what's Harris versus Quinn itself about? Harris versus Quinn involves employees. They're kind of sort of employees of the state of Illinois, and they work as what are called personal assistants. These are employees who work within the Illinois Home Services Program, and that program services Medicaid recipients who would normally need institutional care, but with the help of these personal assistants, they can live at home, and the personal assistants provide home health care services. It's a group of these employees who protested Illinois' fair share law that resulted in this case. And very quickly, maybe immediately, maybe even before the claim was started, very quickly, the employees were represented by an outfit known as the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. The Right to Work Foundation is a longtime player in this whole area of right to work and fair share. You might imagine from the title that its philosophy is nobody should ever be required to join a union ever. In fact, you can probably extend that. The Right to Work Foundation really doesn't think public sector unions should be even in existence. The foundation receives large amounts of funding from individuals and outfits such as Charles and David Koch and the Walton family, who own the lion's share of Walmart, those sorts of organizations. And it's an organization that's philosophically opposed to public unionism. So what happens is when these employees object to their fair share payments, the Right to Work Foundation pushes the case up to the United States Supreme Court. And the Right to Work Foundation's argument is fair share is unconstitutional. How? Why would it be unconstitutional? The argument would be that by forcing someone to give money, in this case, the fair share assessment, forcing somebody to give money, you are in essence forcing speech. And speech is regulated by the First Amendment. And as the argument goes, you may not force a public employee to engage in a certain type of speech. Now, many years ago, almost 40 years ago, 1977, the United States Supreme Court, in a case, and I usually don't spend a lot of time on case names, but this one's important, in a case known as Abood versus Detroit Board of Education, the Supreme Court rejected that argument and found that fair share rules don't violate the free speech guarantees of the First Amendment. In essence, what the court said is look, there's an overriding interest here. You know, these states have deemed that public unionism, the opportunity for it, is in the best interest of the state. And there's that huge free rider problem. Free riders meaning people who are in the bargaining unit who get services and benefits from the union but don't pay a thing. And the court ends up saying, look, requiring someone to pay their share of the cost of negotiating a contract, that isn't enough of a First Amendment burden to overcome these legitimate state justifications for a fair share system. So in Harris versus Quinn, the Right to Work Foundation has set the case up to be the decision where it hopes the five-judge conservative majority of the U.S. Supreme Court will overturn Abood and end fair share in this country. This case was orally argued before the court in January of this year, and when it was argued, there appeared to be some cracks in the armor of this usually invincible five-judge majority. One of the judges in particular, Antonin Scalia, seemed to express some sympathy for the free rider problem. That was a shock to everybody because Justice Scalia very, very rarely votes in favor of an employee in an employment case. He's probably the most reliable conservative vote there is, but he was nonetheless expressing some concern that overturning Abood might not be a good idea. And it's no surprise when you listen to that oral argument, it's no surprise to see today's decision. And I've held you in suspense too long. What did the court do today? What the court did was, first of all, it did not overturn Abood. It did not make fair share illegal in this country. Rather, it issued an extremely narrow opinion. That narrow opinion says that these personal assistants aren't enough like employees to justify having fair share apply to them. Why aren't they enough like employees? Well, a lot of the reasons, the court says. The court says it's the customer. It's not the state that hires these people. It's the customer. It's not the state that has the unfettered discretion to fire them. The customer sets the job duty for the personal assistants. The customer is the supervisor. And these individuals are not eligible for all sorts of state benefits that normally inure to state employees, health insurance, pensions, for example, and even their wages aren't negotiable. So the court ends up saying, and here's the quote that's probably the most important quote in the opinion. The court says, Abood's rationale, whatever its strengths and weaknesses, is based on the assumption that the union possesses the full scope of powers and duties generally available under American labor law. Under the Illinois scheme before us, however, the union's powers and duties are sharply circumscribed. And this is not a good fit for fair share. Now, that didn't stop the five-judge majority. And by the way, Justice Scalia is in the five-judge majority. This is an opinion written by Justice Samuel Alito. We don't know what Justice Scalia is thinking because there's no what are called concurring opinions where judges who agree with the majority write separately to announce their own rationale. So we don't know what Justice Scalia is thinking, although there's hints. I'll tell you in a moment. The fact that the court didn't overturn Abood doesn't mean that the five-judge majority didn't take what the dissenting opinion called potshots at Abood. In fact, the five-judge majority spent three or so pages saying, look, we're not sure Abood's rightly decided. We think it doesn't neatly fit into our structure of constitutional jurisprudence, et cetera, et cetera. The limited nature of the opinion didn't stop the four justices on the other side of this issue, led by Justice Elena Kagan, from writing a pretty savage opinion saying, why are we even thinking about this? Abood's been with us for 40 years. It's good law. States have relied on it. Employees have relied on it. Unions have relied on it. Why are we even thinking about doing that? In the end, though, what we have is a limited opinion that preserves fair share, even if an unusual group of employees in Illinois will be exempt from fair share. So what happened? How did the Right to Work Foundation miscalculate? What happened in the court's deliberations here where the bombshell that was to be turned out to be not so much of a bombshell? In fact, when I read this opinion, I was very much reminded of, there's a wonderful poem by T.S. Eliot about how the world is going to end. And T.S. Eliot writes that the world will probably end not with a bang, but with a whimper. At least I think that's T.S. Eliot. And when I read Harris versus Quinn, I thought, wow, okay. It's ending with a whimper here. This is not the bombshell decision. What's going on? I think those hints from the oral argument turned out to be accurate, that Justice Scalia didn't buy into it. And that meant you didn't have a five-judge majority to overturn Abood and stop fair share. So what you ended up with was five judges, including Justice Scalia, who thought fair share couldn't be applied to these kind of odd employees or quasi-employees in Illinois, but they couldn't get that fifth vote to overturn fair share. And if you read the dissenting opinion, there's clues there as well, because in the dissenting opinion, Justice Kagan really goes to great lengths at one point in her opinion to praise the wit and wisdom of Antonin Scalia. So it looks very much like he may have been the guy who stopped the conservative majority of the Supreme Court from overturning fair share. So that's it for our kind of emergency podcast here. I know a lot of you have been waiting for this decision. Do tune in on Thursday when we do our normal First Thursday podcast. I'll be discussing not only reactions to this fair share decision, and boy, there will be reactions all over the map. I'll also be talking about the Supreme Court's free speech decision from last week, where the Supreme Court seriously changed the rules again in terms of what public employee speech is protected and what is not. And we'll have our full slate of new court decisions and negotiated agreements that I'll be reviewing. See you on Thursday. This is Will Aitchison signing off.